You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Radiolab explores big ideas every week on WNYC. The nationally distributed public radio show disrupted both the public radio and podcast space and has inspired many producers in the world of audio storytelling. Host Chad Aboumarat has spent years perfecting his craft, and he'll share some of his experience in storytelling with an audience in Boise. He will be the featured speaker at the Cabin's Readings and Conversations series on Saturday, February 1st, and he is taking some time out of his busy schedule to chat with us a little bit today. Welcome to Idaho Matters, Chad, and thank you so much for taking some time out.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, I want to start with the genesis of Radiolab. This started back in 2002, and like a lot of people in public radio, you didn't major in journalism. You actually studied experimental music. So I'm curious about how that training informed the way that you really kind of tell stories on Radiolab.
Well, you know, I mean, it was I sort of stumbled into this kind of the wrong direction as as people do these days.
Right.
I mean, I got into radio because I was interested in the sounds and the noises and the music of it all. But I also loved telling stories. And when I first started Radiolab, it was a very different show. And at that point, it was a 3-hour show on the AM frequency in New York. And I would sort of do the weather in between breaks and stuff. It was a very different kind of beast. And it was kind of an anthology show. And so the idea of the show at that point was to explore ideas, but also to play some of the best documentaries from around the world. And so it was a really interesting experience those first 2 years when no one was listening, literally no one.
Your mom probably was.
Not even my mom, because here's the funny thing. They cut the power on the transmitter because of some strange FCC regulation, because the frequencies interfered with Canada for some reason.
Oh, no.
That I don't entirely understand. So they would cut it exactly at the moment my show came on.
So not even no your mom could, was listening.
She couldn't tune it in. So, I had all of these experimental ideas of how to use sound in my ears, but for the first year and a half, really what I was doing was playing great documentaries from the BBC, from Radio Netherlands, from Australia, and some of the great radio tradition we have here. Even going back to Orson Welles, I would play old radio dramas. And it was this great kind of education in what's possible on the radio. And that, plus the sort of sound training I had, really sort of became the blend that is Radiolab.
So you're talking with a public radio audience right now that has likely heard your show. But for those who have not, how do you describe what the aim is and what the show really is?
Oh, man, that is such a – in the 18 years of doing this, I've yet to kind of boil it down to a sentence.
Mm-hmm.
The Radiolab is, it's an evolving thing, so it's changed so many times, but I guess it's a show that tries to delightfully, deeply, investigatively, musically dive into the complexities of the world and find things that we didn't know existed and strange connections that we didn't know is there that make us feel somehow glad to be alive. I mean, I don't know. That sounds corny when I say it, but
it makes you want to listen. I'll tell you that.
Oh, that's good. That's
I mean,
good.
See,
that's good.
Yeah. So, so you have a co-host, Robert Krulwich, and what brought the two of you together? Because he started soon after, like slightly after you started the program, correct?
Yeah. So, I started in 2002, and he sort of became a full-time member, I'd say 2003 or 4. It was like everything with Radiolab. It was a strange, unplanned happening. In the early days of Radiolab, in order to make myself useful so that they didn't fire me, because there's no one listening, as I mentioned, I would make promos for WNYC, and that would be the way that I would sort of justify my existence, is that while I was making promos, I was also making this weird show that no one heard. And in the middle of my promo making, they ran a campaign around pledge drive time, which meant going and interviewing some sort of famous New Yorkers about their support for WNYC, and Robert was on the list. And I show up at his office, and you know, I had interviewed for these promos maybe 35 people before that, and Robert, I walk in, and it was instantly clear this guy was just weird and different. He didn't want to read the thing I gave him. He wrote his own thing. It was so funny. We just start talking, and the chemistry was instantaneous. And suddenly, at the end of it, I was like, hey, do you want to have breakfast or something? And he's like, sure. So we had breakfast the next day, and then we started having breakfast every month. And then at one point, he heard this weird show I was making. And he said, "Yeah, it's pretty good. But let me come on, and we can do some stuff." And then we started doing 5-minute pieces really early in the mornings. We would come together and make a thing, and then I'd put it on the show. And those 5 minutes grew to 10 minutes a week, and then 20 minutes a week, and then he was basically always there.
Yeah. Then you couldn't get him to leave. Except
yeah, I couldn't get him to leave.
Except he is retiring. So has he officially retired at this point?
He's retiring at the end of the month. Oh. So I just actually yesterday sat in a studio with him, and we recorded the final piece that we'll be hosting together. And then we're going to celebrate him in the episode after that. And then he's going to basically just be, he'll be, you know, obviously coming back for reruns and things like that. And we'll be inventing as many excuses as we can muster to get him to come back and play with us. But yeah, that sort of chapter is slowly ending.
So will you have a different co-host moving forward, or what will this show look like?
You know, over the last few years, the show has really grown into a collective of these amazing reporters and producers. And so I think it's going to be a little bit more of a collective than a duet. I'll still host the show and be the primary voice people hear. But for at least the next 6 months to a year, I think it's just going to be a loud, echoey room full of people, these producers walking on with their stories. And then maybe in a year or so, we'll start thinking about what would it even look like if we had another co-host. I don't know. It's like, this show is such a product of the two of us that it feels like we kind of need to chart a different direction.
Yeah, and kind of maybe take some time, like you said, right? And let it breathe for a little bit. Yeah. We're talking with Radiolab host Jad Abumrad. He's giving a talk in Boise at the Cabin on February 1st. And, you know, Radiolab isn't the only thing you do, we should mention. You've also worked on a spinoff podcast. It's called More Perfect, and it's about the Supreme Court. But most recently, people may not know this, you have a new obsession.
America from a dolly's eye view is this quivering mass of irreconcilable contradictions.
I'm going to be both. I'm going to be adored by church ladies and the gays.
Yeah, the sexuality, the spirituality, the sensuality. That's exactly who I am.
She's just a beautiful fountain of goodness.
It's me.
100% Dolly is an extractive capitalist.
I always say I give God the credit. I just want the cash.
In terms of cultural power, I think she's like second to Walt Disney.
This is Jad Abumrad from Radiolab and More Perfect. For the last 2 years, I've been following Dolly Parton around the world. Trying to figure out who she is.
You'd be surprised to know who I am.
That's why we're here. We're trying to find
out. I know, but you're never going to find everything out. I'm a mystery to myself.
I'm trying to answer the seemingly simple question.
What is Dolly Parton's America?
Well.
Answers coming soon on Dolly Parton's America.
And that was the trailer for Dolly Parton's America. This is your latest podcast project. Okay, first off, you have gotten to go around the world with Dolly Parton. I mean, does life truly get any better than that?
Yeah, you know, there was a moment when we were in the UK with her for the premiere of 9 to 5, the musical at the Savoy Theatre. And she was nice enough to sort of let me follow her as she walked the red carpet. And so I got to actually stand next to her as she was walking the red carpet.
Wow.
And I definitely had a moment where I was like, wow, I can't believe this is my job. I get to just stand next to this incredible person. So, yeah, I feel very grateful, very lucky.
So what made you decide, you know what, you're going to do a deep dive into Dolly Parton, but also, she is a cultural icon in our country, and the influence that she has over so many groups of people.
Yeah, you know, what made me do it is I feel like we all are searching right now for visions of America that are unifying visions, and, you know, where we can remind ourselves that we actually do live in a country where we can all agree on something. Mm-hmm. And it was around June 2016 that I really got the idea to do this series, because what was happening at that moment, if you remember, was the presidential election was really getting nasty. You had the sort of Trump lock her up rallies. You had the deplorable situation. Like, on the TV, things were horrible, and America seemed so divided. But then Dolly Parton, at that very same moment, was on a 67-city tour across America. She did more dates than anyone that year. And I kept hearing stories of people coming back from Dolly Parton concerts and saying things like, I couldn't believe it. There were people of faith standing next to men in drag, standing next to guys in trucker hats, standing next to little girls with sparkly shoes, a multiracial, multi-ethnic audience, and everybody standing shoulder to shoulder and singing the same song. It was a really an amazing alternate vision of America. And so I just really wanted to kind of understand how she has lived a life that has made that possible. Mm-hmm. And that turns out to be it's sort of a simple, naive question, but it turns out to open up all of these wormholes into the history of the South, the history of Appalachia, the women's movement, country music, so many little worlds sort of diverged from that simple question. And that became the series. It became like looking at America through this one icon.
You know, it's so funny. When I was a little girl, was when the movie 9 to 5 came out. And I would, back in the days of VHS and VCRs, mm-hmm. and we actually had that movie. And I would watch it with my dad. And now thinking back on it, I'm like, I cannot believe my parents let me watch this movie when I was a little kid. But, you know, I remember my dad just... All three of the actresses in it, you know, Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, Dolly Parton, loved the movie. You know, it was so funny. But I remember my dad, and I'm talking, I was little, would say things like, you know, look at those women taking charge of their lives, right? And and so this is, you know, for me, just seeing Dolly Parton as a little girl, you know, and then finding out all of these other things about her, like she had so many brothers and sisters. I have so many brothers and sisters, but also her immense talent, right? And all of the songs that she has written over the years. She's an incredible icon. But at the same time, she just seems like the most down-to-earth person you'd ever meet. And is, I guess, our notions of Dolly who she really is?
Yeah. I mean, one of the incredible and mystifying things about her is that I remember the first time I walked into a room to meet her for the first time, and she kind of walked into the room, and it was the eeriest thing. It was like as if you were seeing this person who you've seen on TV and in movies just suddenly appear in front of you. And she was exactly the same person, had the exact same energy, that same sense of kind of authenticity. But what's amazing to me is that everybody sees in her something different. You know, people who are on the coasts might see a very progressive, body positivity, feminist figure. People where I grew up in Tennessee see somebody who's sort of wholesome, a woman of faith. If you're a musician, you see somebody who's one of the great songwriters of our time. Everybody really sees something different. And it's always true. That's what's amazing, is that she doesn't ever seem to modify who she is to suit an audience. But she's just kind of a very complex figure. And so there's so many facets of her that people can draw out.
Was there something that surprised you in exploring this topic? I mean, either personally or as a producer?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think first and foremost, I don't think I ever truly appreciated how prolific she's been. Mm. You know, just that there was a period 1967 to 73 where she was writing number one songs as she walked down the hall. Just these songs were just falling out of her head. And they were, you know, world-changing songs like Jolene. And so I was bowled over by just the scale of her creativity when I started looking at it.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that really, really struck me, and is, I mean, you mentioned growing up watching 9 to 5, the movie. If you watch that movie now, it's still kind of a radical film. Like it's
right.
still pretty, it's still like, it's holds up and it's very political. And it was actually literally made about a union, about a union of female clerical workers, as they were called. And so it was Jane Fonda's attempt to make essentially an advertisement for this union. And then Dolly Parton writes the song that becomes the great anthem of working people. And what's amazing to me is that somebody who did that refuses to be called a feminist, refuses to take political stands of any kind. So it's amazing to me that she is both intensely political in her music and in her life, but she will not speak politics. She will not allow the music to be used by campaigns. That to me is really surprising and interesting.
So I heard a rumor that your dad is now friends with her.
Yeah, that was, I mean, to be completely honest, that's one of the reasons I could do the series, is that he was able to make an introduction. Yes, in 2013, she got into a car accident, very minor car accident in Nashville, and he was one of the people that gave her medical advice.
Stop it.
And then suddenly, yeah, it was one of these weird twists of fate. And then suddenly, every so often, his phone would ring and it would be hers. And I never really believed it was her.
Yeah, you're like, come, okay, Dad, and, whatever. Yeah, okay.
I know. I was like, Dad, he's not one of those guys. He's not like a famous person kind of guy. He's
right. But it's Dolly Parton.
I know. I mean, she's one of the most famous people on the planet. But she would call him up for medical advice, and then they got to be pals. And then around 2016, when the election was happening, I called him up and I was like, Dad, I really need to talk to Dolly Parton. Do you really know her? He was like, okay, come to Nashville. I'll introduce you.
Oh, I love it.
And that was it.
So you'll be in Boise in a couple of weeks. So what can folks who are attending the talk at the cabin expect?
You know, I mean, I'm going to talk a lot about some of the ingredients of what makes great Radiolab stories, like the stories I use in the Dolly podcast, like what makes a really good story work? What does the story need to have? So on some level, it's kind of like almost like a mechanic lifting up the hood of a car and showing you how the engine works.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit like that. But it's also on another level, a story about my own journey and, you know, a time in my life when I needed to remind myself why what I do it matters, because I had forgotten. And so it's a little bit my own personal journey, but it's also sort of like throughout that, the story of what I do and how I do it. And I hope it people will sit there and they will lean back and it will feel, I hope, like a Radiolab show. It's very, there's some original music that I put into it. There's a lot of videos and things. So there'll be things to look at, but it will sound like the show.
Well, and I'll tell you this, you're going to have a great audience in Boise because, you know, it's kind of like we have this saying, Boise kind, Boise nice. So people will be very, very nice and attentive. I promise.
Oh, cool. I can't wait to be there.
Hey, it was lovely talking to you. Thank you so much for taking some time out of your day.
Oh, my God. Thank you for having me. This was delightful.
Absolutely. We've been talking with radio host and producer Jad Abumrad. You can hear him speak in person at the Egyptian Theater in Boise. That's on February 1st. This is part of the Cabin's Readings and Conversations series. But again, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
This is Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters.